Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Welcome back to FST. Good stuff out of Ryan Talbot there, right, Jeff?
Fantastic. Absolutely loved it. Yeah. I would have loved to have been able just to ask him what he thinks the successful season for the Bills would be, but obviously, I mean, there's so much stuff to get to. We ran out, which is fine.
I know it's tough. You got like 15 minutes. We'll make sure to do that with Brian Costello, and maybe I'll even shoot Ryan a text to see what he thinks it will be. So we'll update that by the end of the show. But so. You know, that schedule is brutal. You mentioned it. I mentioned it to him, and he's like, well, they're just trying to get out of that 2-2. It's basically.
You know, well, it's not just the first four. I mean.
And then the Titans are. Right. The Titans are after that at Houston, at Indy, Patriots. That's their first eight games. I can't imagine that anybody has a harder first eight games. In fact, as you're commenting, I'm going to look up strength of schedules.
Well, as I was reading Warren Sharp's breakdowns, they said they have the toughest first six games of anybody in the league. And I don't think just being able to play the Colts would make it any easier because in the first eight, you have the Patriots. If they saw three wins in their first eight games, that would be shocking, I would say. And I know, I mean, listen, especially when you do it in July, it's difficult to go win, win, loss, loss, win. You know, who knows what's... Last year, I thought the Packers might win 14 games. They lose Aaron Rodgers, and now win projections are completely out the window. So maybe some things change, but you look at those teams that they're coming up against. I mean, Buffalo isn't in the same tier. They're not in the same tier as all of them but one. So you can pull upsets, but when the gap is that big, and that is just the reason why I mentioned the McDermott thing. Listen, Mike, I understand what you said. That's their guy and everything. If they're 1-7, things get dicey. They just do. Especially if Josh Allen wins this job and they're 1-7, it's going to get really dicey. That's why you have to go with the guy that wins the job. And there's really no perfect time. Because, you know, a lot of the times, I know I do this. I'll look at it and I'll say, oh, who do they play after the bye week? Normally coming off the bye week, 2 weeks to prep. Going to Jacksonville after the bye week. There's no perfect time necessarily to get Josh Allen out there. You brought AJ McCarron in for a reason. And I hate to, you know, to say this, but let's call it what it is. It's nice to have a scapegoat if things go wrong. And if things go great with AJ, great. I'd rather them not go wrong with Josh Allen, though, in those first couple of weeks, because I can't imagine that they go right.
Yeah, I hear you. To focus on fantasy for a second, like even in talking to Ryan just now, I don't think you need to freak out about LeSean McCoy, but you have to.
You freaked me out about LeSean McCoy though. That was you. I remember the age,
I'm nervous,
the workload, you terrified me. I went and I looked at all my best balls, how many shares I had of LeSean McCoy after that show. I was very upset. I'm not going to lie to you, Mike. You scared the crap out of me with him. Well, everything you said was valid.
I'm still concerned.
As you should
be. I'm still concerned. And he had 346 touches last year, and they're missing their entire left side of their offensive line, which obviously one of them is replaced, as he said. So it's not entirely inexperienced on that left side of the line for the Bills, but it is a concern. The upside is that they run the ball so much. He touched the ball 346 times last year, but this is always about extracting the right value out of it, right? So you need to figure out where you're drafting him. Where were you when your best balls? Where were you getting him?
He was typically within that within the second round. I mean, it varied within that, but he was a second round pick. And I think the thing for LeSean is I don't care about efficiency. About that doesn't matter at all to me. If he plays 16 games, he's going to be one of he's going to have to have top five in overall touches in the league. I couldn't imagine him not finishing if he plays 16 games. And he's actually played 31 of a possible 32 games over the last two seasons. But Shady isn't necessarily a guy that has a reputation of a great bill of health. And that's where the concern for me comes in with an older running back that is likely to not only get beat up by a poor offensive line, but is going to see so much of the football. If he makes it out of the first 16, you're going to end up getting a steal based on where he ends up, where the ADP is, because the touches will be there. But I am now very concerned.
He finished seventh in PPR leagues last year.
Mm-hmm.
He had the second most carries in the league. I'm trying to do the math quickly right here as far as touches are concerned. I would imagine, yeah, Le'Veon Bell is the only one that clearly had more touches than him.
Maybe Gurley.
Melvin Gordon was right behind him. Gurley was right behind him. Basically same number, 53. No, that's it. So that's it. Just Le'Veon Bell. Gurley and Gordon were like right there with him. So, but McCoy played all 17 games. He got banged up during one of them. Melvin Gordon played all 16 games, and Todd Gurley played only 15 of those games. He didn't play in week 17. So Gurley on touches per game, Gurley is in front of him, as is Le'Veon Bell, but LeSean McCoy basically third in the league in touches.
And would it be safe to say that he could see an uptick in touches just based on the way the roster's currently constructed?
I don't think they can do that.
I mean, you're running a risk, but it's if they're going to try to win football games. Like, that's – I know everyone's trying to win football games.
Of course.
But this is a team that I think – I do think that if you asked the front office – and that, again, that's why if you can send that text to Ryan, that would be fantastic. Because I think that they looked at that – fact, they went 9-7 last year, and I think that that's what they want to do. I don't know if that's feasible, but if that's what they want, then Shady's going to see a lot of the football. A lot of the football.
All right, so let's move over to the wide receiver position then after hearing him talk about Zay Jones and the concern with the injury and Kelvin Benjamin possibly being the volume guy. So for any of you saying, all right, I'm going to scoop up Zay Jones here in year two, and that's when he's going to get it done, I think Ryan would make you very cautious of doing that, because there's no indication that Zay Jones is going to be like good to go here for training camp.
And I think the fact that he mentioned the rapport with the quarterbacks, I mean, there is no built-in stability there at all with Zay Jones. So not only having to battle coming off the injury, but then having to shake that rust off while building chemistry, it could be a really tough season for Zay Jones. Really difficult.
Looking up their ADPs right now, Kelvin Benjamin currently at the 43rd wide receiver off the board. So that's a wide receiver 4. And then you look at Zay Jones, 94th. So undraftable basically is where he's at this point. In much deeper leagues and in your Scott Fish Bowls, he's a guy that'll be owned. But in your standard 12-team league, 6 wide receivers per, he's way off. So he's a waiver wire fodder and not even people looking. I mean, this guy's like, I know you like to say his name, but Equanimeous St. Brown is in front of him. And guys like right in front of him are Albert Wilson, who's now on the Dolphins, and James Washington, a rookie from Pittsburgh down there. I guarantee you more people take flyers on James Washington than they do Zay Jones, because people always like the shiny new toy, even though rookie wide receivers don't do much typically in the league. So,
another thing,
a big concern. But Kelvin Benjamin, you're just going to assume is going to suck up a lot of those targets based on what Ryan said.
Well, yeah, but the problem with that is, right, even if you're target hunting, how many targets are there? Because this was a team that over the past couple of years, they haven't thrown the football that often. And maybe that was Tyrod Taylor. But I can't imagine that their plan is A.J. McCarron or Josh Allen or Nathan Peterman, if he somehow got the job, to be throwing the football 30 times a game. I can't imagine that that would be the game plan. I mean, last year their high man on targets was LeSean McCoy with 77, led them in receptions with 59. Again, it's one of those things where you have to look for volume. I mean, if you can get a guy that's going to get 100 targets, it's valuable. But is there a guy that's going to be able to get to that mark on this team? I don't know.
You know, it's, the funny thing is there's a couple of teams like this. The Steelers are like this, too, where as much as running back by committee has become in vogue in the NFL and it frustrates the hell out of fantasy owners, there's a couple of teams that still hold strong. You know, when the Steelers had D'Angelo Williams in there and he was very good in spelling Le'Veon Bell, it's not like they shared the ball once Le'Veon Bell came back. They work with one back, and that's what they're going to do. The Bills are obviously like this. The Chargers are like this for the most part, and the Rams clearly are like this. The Bears are in an interesting – the Chiefs did a lot of that last year, and the Bears are in an interesting position because they have obviously a guy in Tariq Cohen that can really provide a spark out of the backfield. And we'll see long-term. Jordan Howard only saw 23 targets on the season last year. It's an insignificant amount. So, but those first guys I mentioned, it doesn't matter if they have a capable backup. They're just going to give it to the lead guy. They're just going to let him get into a flow, occasional break during the game. But it's never going to be like, well, let's just limit him to 18 touches and let the other guy get 10 and make sure he's healthy over the course of the season. They don't care. The Steelers didn't care. They're like, just give him the ball 400 times. He's going to be great over the course of it. And he is. Same with the Bills. I think they're just saying, you know what? Shady's in his last 2 years with us. I'm not suggesting that they're trying to do something that will injure him, but I think they're just at a point where they're saying, you know what? It's okay. He can touch the ball 300 times. He's held up for us. We're just going to have to do our best. He's our best option. We don't need to give Chris Ivory the ball 10 times and tick down LeSean McCoy's touches per game.
Well, how do you like Chris Ivory as a handcuff then? Because if Shady's not going to be able to make it the full 16, I mean, I agree with you, right? I mean, I think you said that perfectly. I don't think that they're going to worry about getting Ivory involved on a week-to-week basis if Shady's available. But if Shady goes down, then is Ivory one of the handcuffs that you would find yourself targeting?
I don't dedicate myself to handcuffs. Mm. Typically, in a league like Scott Fishbowl, I would, because there's no trades there and there's less available on the waiver wire, and he is somebody that will be drafted. So when I know a handcuff is going to be drafted in a league like that, yeah, I'll target him, and I'll probably be the first guy to go after somebody like that to make sure that I'm whole, because I can't really make up anything from the waiver wire on something like that. So generally, I don't, in your redraft leagues, I'm not going to dedicate myself to a handcuff, but I would imagine, yeah, Ivory is a good fallback for somebody like McCoy if you're going to be concerned about his health. He obviously has had major injuries in the past, and it is something you need to be concerned of, especially with what may be a downgraded offensive line.
Yeah, I think it was yesterday in Jake's bold takes, he said that the Colts only had two draftable players. I mean, can you up the ante? I guess you have to draft Charles Clay. Are the Bills in a similar situation where Shady and Clay are? You probably have to take that shot in Kelvin Benjamin. So, yeah, I guess there are more guys there, but this is a team. I mean, Mike, how do you feel?
Not everybody's going to be a superstar. You do need depth.
Yeah. No,
so
for sure.
Kelvin Benjamin is a depth guy.
How are you looking at this quarterback situation? Because, I mean, that does play with into this fantasy stuff. Is there a guy that you're expecting to take this job? I mean, I would be really surprised if it were Nathan Peterman. I mean, Ryan said that he did look good, and I do think it's anyone's job. And, you know, of course, as we get into training camp, we'll have a better idea.
They don't owe anything to A.J. McCarron except a bunch of cash. They don't owe anything to Nathan Peterman anymore, but they're not going to bury him on the depth chart. If he wins the job, he wins the job. We saw this with Russell Wilson when he was a rookie and the Seahawks had signed Matt Flynn. They're like, we just owe you some money. If you get outplayed, you get outplayed, and we're going to play the rookie, and they did, and they were right, obviously. But same thing here. I think it's any man's game. I think we're going to talk about the Jets right after this, and I think it's any man's game too. They paid who they've paid. They drafted this guy. It's anybody's ball game. Whoever can take the ball and run with it. I do think if A.J. McCarron's as talented as his agent and he thinks he is, that he could win this job but run into some problems because the schedule is so hard. That's what always concerns me when teams are like, ugh, this just isn't going well. We got to make a change. And then you don't even know if the rookie is going to be any better. You just need to make a change.
Let me ask you.
I think that's what the Bills could be looking at. Yeah.
How different, if at all, would your outlook be if Josh Rosen was the quarterback that they drafted? Because I know it would be different for me.
Well, I like Rosen more than Allen. So.
Well, that's why I asked.
Different. Yeah. I like Rosen more than Allen. And I said as the draft was getting closer, I think Rosen might be the guy in a couple of years, even if this team struggles. And obviously Vegas hates the Cardinals this year, but even if this team struggles, like, he can be the guy in a couple of years where people are like, what were we doing? Like, how did we evaluate all this? And this guy's throwing the ball all over the league. He's as good a passer as there is in the NFC. You know, I'm just putting that in quotes because making a wild projection. But that was my concern. Like, I think Rosen has got the head about him, the competitiveness, that he's just like, screw this. I don't care that anybody let me fall. I'm going to prove all of them wrong. And I think there's 9 teams that made mistakes, and that's how he's approaching it. So there you go. I think the Bills are not a playoff team this year. We can come up with our final record predictions at the end of the show. But
yeah.
I think there's still plenty of question marks there. For a team that just made the playoffs, a lot of question marks. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to Brian Costello from the New York Post about the Jets. Ask him a whole bunch of questions, fantasy related and otherwise, next on FST.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Sunday morning. Nice job by Sean Engel there. Back on Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for listening to us on FNTSY, whether you found us on TuneIn Radio or iHeart Radio or the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. We appreciate it, and thanks for listening. We're going around the AFC East. We're going to have Brian Costello in here in a minute from the New York Post to talk about the Jets and all things related to that, and he is here. So, first, I'd like to wish you a happy summer, Brian Costello. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So you can find him on Twitter at Brian Koz. That's C-O-Z. He's the New York Jets beat reporter for the New York Post and WFAN 101.9, 660 AM in the greater New York area and beyond. So obviously, last we talked, we were anticipating whom the Jets may take in the NFL draft, and here they found their franchise quarterback, somebody that they have been waiting for. I know we've been in this position about 9 seasons ago, but we once again have a franchise quarterback for the Jets in Sam Darnold. So give me a sense of early returns, what the quarterback room looks like, and what it may look like come week one.
I think this is the strongest the Jets quarterback room has looked in a long time, you know, because there's kind of 3 guys in there that Josh McCown is the known quantity here. And I think they were happy with what they got from Josh last year. Obviously, his ceiling is not very high. You know what you're going to get from Josh McCown. He's played for a long time, but he played, you know, he set some career highs last year with the Jets, and they liked his leadership. So he's the known quantity. And then you have Teddy Bridgewater, who's an unknown because he's missed the last 2 years, but he looks pretty good this spring moving around. You know, the question is going to be how he deals with getting hit when preseason starts. We'll know a lot more about where he is at. And then Sam Darnold is the future. You know, I think Bridgewater, they just view as kind of a lottery ticket that they bought low. And if he's great, then maybe he plays this year. If he's not, then he could, you know, he could be traded, or they might get rid of him before the season. They really didn't invest a lot, but Darnold is the guy they're counting on for the future. And we'll see if that future begins in 2018. I think, you know, in training camp, they're going to give him every opportunity to win the job. But I don't think they'll force him in there. They're not going to rush it. They feel like they have a good situation where if he's not ready, they can play Josh McCown or Teddy Bridgewater.
Brian, what would you say their ideal situation would be for that quarterback room? McCown, whatever they need him to do is what he will do. Do you think that they want to be able to trade Bridgewater, or do they want him to be the starter? Do they want Darnold to be week one, or do they want him to come along slowly? What do you feel for that?
Yeah, I think the ideal situation is Sam Darnold walks in there and he shows them he can be the starter day one, sort of like what Carson Wentz did a few years ago in Philadelphia. You know, this situation reminds me of that very much. You know, where Philadelphia had Bradford, they had Chase Daniel, I think, was the second, and then they drafted Wentz, and everyone was like, wow, they drafted Wentz after they spent all that money on Sam Bradford and Chase Daniel, because I think Chase Daniel got a pretty big contract for them for a career backup. You know, and then in August, you know, you come in there and Wentz really showed them something, and then the Vikings lose Bridgewater, coincidentally, and the Eagles are able to turn around and deal Sam Bradford to the Vikings and make Wentz the week one starter. I think that's the dream scenario, because Sam Darnold is the future of this franchise. So the quicker you can get to that future, the better. But I don't think they're going to, like I said before, I don't think they're going to rush this. I think he would have to come in and show them he can do it to get the job. I think they'll be comfortable playing the other guys. And yeah, I think trading Teddy Bridgewater is the best thing for them, because, you know, there's no future for Teddy Bridgewater with the Jets. Obviously, they just drafted Sam Darnold. So the most you could get out of him would be a year. And what good is that really going to do anyone for the future? This team is not a Super Bowl contender this year, you know? So what good is Bridgewater going to do for them this year? Mm-hmm. So I think if they could turn around and trade him, you know, at the end of August when teams start losing quarterbacks and to injuries, that would be, you know, see what they can get in return for him. That would be the ideal situation for them.
Again, this is Brian Costello. You can find him on Twitter at Brian Cos, Jets beat reporter for The Post and WFAN. So the running back group is pretty interesting to me because they have a veteran group. Some guys have had big expectations hoisted upon them in the past, but now they all find themselves together in the same running back committee. Crowell, Powell, Rawls, McGuire, they drafted Trenton Cannon. So an interesting group. I'm sure they like it, but is there an expectation that one guy is going to take the lead? Is Isaiah Crowell the guy in front of the rest of the group?
I think so. I think Crowell's a guy. You look at what they invested in him, you know, money-wise and going out and signing him. I think he's the guy. And the thing they liked about Crowell is his durability. He doesn't miss games. You know, he plays 16 games a year. The Jets have not had that with the other guy in the room, with Bilal Powell. With, you know, they had Chris Ivory for a while. Then they had Matt Forte at the tail end of his career. Those guys both missed a lot of games. They were getting hurt a lot, which benefited Bilal Powell because Powell would then get the carries. But I think the Jets wanted someone that they know or that they hope from his track record is going to be able to play 16 games. So I think Crowell is the number one guy. I still think Powell is the number two guy with McGuire coming. You know, he showed some things last year, and obviously the running backs coach, Stubb Mitchell, compared him to LaDainian Tomlinson this spring, which I think is a little much. But they do that. And I don't know. Rawls is kind of a guy. Let's see what happens with Rawls in training camp. I'm not sure what he has left and what they're – I think they just kind of signed him just to have another guy in the room and see what he can do. And then Cannon, I think, is more of a special teams guy at this point. I think they're looking at him as more of a returner right now.
Sure.
Let me ask you with Crowell. Because I think that – I agree with you. He's probably the most talented back that they have there. The one thing that did happen while he was in Cleveland is he got very frustrated with how he was used with Hugh Jackson. Part of that was Hugh Jackson a number of times threw him under the bus. But just How do you see him meshing with the coaches and the players in the locker room? I mean, you know, just from what you can see out there on the field, does it look like he's happy with where he's at?
Yeah, right now. I mean, he's with a new team. They haven't played a game yet. He hasn't. So, you know, he's like, he's going to be like every other running back and wide receiver. If he's getting the ball, he's going to be happy. If he's not, he's not going to be happy. That's how they all are. So, you know, we'll see. I think right now he's going to get a decent amount of carries. I think it should be fine. I also know he talked to Josh McCown before he came to the Jets, because McCown, they played together in Cleveland, so he knows him. He knows Buster Screen from Cleveland. So he kind of had some intel on the Jets organization before he got here. So I think, you know, he knew what he was getting into. And to me, it's a great situation for him, because if he produces, he's going to be the guy on the field. I don't think there's any question. If he flips a little bit, then, you know, he's going to lose some carries to Bilal Powell or Elijah McGuire. But I think he controls his destiny here.
How about the offensive line? It's a group. We got guys back from last year. I don't know that they graded out particularly well, but at the same time, this group is all together. A lot of times, in my experience in covering the NFL, the consistency across the line sometimes produces a greater outcome than maybe the individual talent. So keeping units together can be very helpful. What are your thoughts on the offensive line for the season?
Yeah, I think it's a concern. I think it's one of their biggest areas of weakness. They didn't play particularly well last year, and the only change they made was at center. Signing Spencer Long, they didn't even go out and sign one of the top free agent centers. You know, Weston Richburg was out there, and a few others, and they decided to go with Spencer Long, which I thought didn't make much sense with how much cap space they had. They really could have gone out and signed one of the big ones. So, you know, I think it's a huge question mark with this group. And last year, James Carpenter, I thought, took a big step back. Brian Winters was playing hurt for most of the year, so that hurt him. And then Brandon Shell is still kind of developing. You know, he needs to take a step forward for this line to be better. But that's one of the biggest areas I'll be watching in training camp and preseason to see what they look like. I think the Jets are hoping that more than anything, a scheme change is going to help that group. You know, with Jeremy Bates as offensive coordinator now, they brought in Rick Dennison as the offensive line coach, who's a veteran offensive line coach. They're hoping that those changes will help. They're going to go more to a zone scheme, zone blocking scheme. And, you know, I think they're counting on that happening rather than a talent infusion. They're hoping the scheme change will help the offensive line this year.
Brian, I'm looking at this wide receiver corps. I like what I see. I think that this might be one of the most underrated wide receiver groups within this league. How do you look at it? Do you like what you see there?
Yeah, it's an interesting group. There's no number one. So They're not going to be talked about, because there's not an Odell Beckham. There's not a Julio Jones. There's not AJ Green. There's no one that's like, oh, this is my number one fantasy receiver. That doesn't exist on the Jets. But like 2 through 6 receiver, like, you know, I can't imagine there's many teams that have this much depth here, because I'm looking at it and you don't know, you know, and there's some question marks. Quincy Newton was coming off a neck injury. You don't know what you're going to get from him. And Terrell Pryor obviously had a down year with the Redskins last year. Is he going to bounce back and be the guy that he was 2 years ago? So there's question marks, but there's, if some of those guys come through, they're going to have a really good group. You know, Robbie Anderson, I thought, really developed last year and showed he could do more than just run, you know, a 9 route down the field. He showed he could do some things. So with him and Anunua and Jermaine Kearse, I thought was a really good pickup for him for the Jets last year. And then you don't know what you're getting from Pryor. They have Chad Hansen, who they drafted last year out of Cal. He had a really good spring. He looked really good. And Ardarius Stewart, they drafted out of Alabama last year. They've got they got 5 or 6 guys that could contend for a lot of playing time this year. So I think it's a pretty deep group. It's probably the deepest receiving core I've covered with the Jets, but they don't have that top guy that makes you go, wow. And so I don't think they're going to, that's why you say they're kind of underrated. They're not going to draw a lot of attention because of that.
Yeah. They do have a crazy amount of depth. I agree. So defensive side of the ball, obviously you're in now year two of Jamal Adams, Marcus May, good young safeties there. They signed Tremaine Johnson. There's really their biggest splash in free agency. So how big of an impact can Johnson have on the defense as a whole?
I think it's going to be big if he performs up to the level of a number one cornerback. You know, he's got to live up to that contract now, because the biggest weakness on the Jets defense is pass rush. They don't have an outside pass rusher, and that really hurts them. But if you have a number one cornerback, you know, Todd Bowles now can start scheming up some blitzes and doing some different things. You know, if Johnson's going to take one half of the field away and one guy, then it frees up the defense coordinator to do some things. The Jets really haven't had that since Bowles has been here, and they haven't had that. You know, Revis came back and he wasn't that true number one anymore. So I think Todd will be able to be a lot more aggressive, which he was when he was a defense coordinator with the Cardinals. And we really haven't seen it in little bits and pieces with the Jets, but I think they're hoping Johnson can come in and be that shutdown corner, and then Todd can be a lot more creative with his defenses.
Do you feel like the boat has sailed on Darren Lee? First 2 years have been a struggle, but if he figures it out, I think that could really elevate this defense. So what are you seeing from him?
Yeah, I don't think the boat has sailed. I think this is a big year for him. Yeah. You know, I think this is the year he's got to show something. They got to make a decision next spring on whether to pick up his fifth-year option. He improved last year. You know, his first year he was really swimming. He didn't, you know, you could tell he didn't know what was going on very much. But last year I thought as the year went on, he played better. He had some really tough games early in the year, but I thought as it went on, he went better. And, you know, the interesting thing with me with Lee was when he was drafted out of Ohio State, everyone talks about his coverage skills, you know, and the concern was, could he play between the tackles at his size? But he was going to be this great cover guy that could cover Gronkowski, or he could cover somebody in the slot. I really haven't seen that. You know, I don't think he's been good in coverage, and he's actually been better, I thought, between the tackles than I thought he'd be. So they're putting more on his plate this year. He's going to be the play caller. He's going to be the guy that kind of run the defense, which he hasn't been since he's been here. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he handles that, and if he can step up and do that job. But this is a huge year for Darren. I think this is going to kind of be determining his future with the Jets.
So two quick questions then to close it out. One, give me a surprise player, maybe somebody that we haven't talked about yet, or of the players that we talked about, somebody you think can really have a big impact on this team that people may not be looking at the moment.
I think Avery Williamson, the linebacker they signed from Tennessee, I think he can have a huge impact. You know, I think he's a guy that they signed to replace DeMario Davis, and they feel like they got a younger, cheaper version of Davis. I think he could be a leading tackler on this team. That's the way Bowles' defense works. He funnels everything to the linebacker, so I think he could be a big one that really emerges there. And, you know, offensively, I think Chad Hansen could be a guy that has a bigger role than people expect. Like I mentioned before, he looked really good in the spring. Now, there's a lot of receivers in that room, like we talked about, but to me, Hansen kind of stood out and maybe earned himself a longer look in training camp than he would have gotten.
So, and the last one I'll ask before you enjoy the rest of your Sunday, Vegas has them pegged at about 6.5 wins. What is your expectation for them? And B, what do they think would be their successful season? Obviously, a playoff berth would be ideal.
Yeah.
But what are your thoughts on what their season is going to look like this year?
Yeah, I think 6.5 is a good number. You know, I think they're going to be right probably around there. You know, I want to see training camp before I really put a number on it. But to me, This if they win 8 games, that's a really good season for them. This is still a roster that's in the middle of a rebuild. You know, this is kind of year two of this project that they started. You know, last year they really tore it down. And then this year was kind of about finding the quarterback and finding a few pieces like, you know, Tremaine Johnson and Avery Williamson, like I mentioned. I think next year is the year they're going to really spend. They're going to have the most cap space in the NFL next year projected. So next year is going to be when they kind of go for it. So to me, if they win 8 games this year, that's a really good season for them. To me, they're probably more like a 5-win, 6-win team. Again, there's still a lot of holes on this roster that need to be filled.
They luckily got the Vikings and the Packers at home, so that broke a little bit better for them than it could have otherwise. We just spoke with Ryan Talbot from the Bills, and they got both of those guys on the road, so it didn't break well for them.
Yeah, I think anywhere is going to be tough. You know, it's going to be interesting with Kirk Cousins because the Jets really wanted him, so when he comes in, that's going to be a big story. And for the Packers, you know, Muhammad Wilkerson will return. So those are two big ones, two big games, two big storylines for us at least. But yeah, and to me, the Jets schedule too, the key with the Jets schedule is the start. They have three games within, I think it's 11 days. They start on Monday night, then they play on a Sunday, then they play on Thursday. That's a really tough start. And if you are starting a rookie quarterback, that's a tough task. You can't really make too many adjustments playing a short week in week two and a short week in week three. That's going to be tough for anybody, but especially if you're a rookie.
Yeah, September 10th, September 16th, September 20th, all three games, two of them on the road for the Jets to start it. So, Brian, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon during the course of training camp or the season, hopefully. Enjoy the rest of your summer. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. That was Brian Costello from the New York Post and WFAN. Find him on Twitter at Brian Koz, that's C-O-Z. Kevin and I will be back to talk about the Jets right after this.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back on FST, great stuff from Brian Costello on the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, we have such a limited amount of time at times to get through it. We're just trying to rapid fire to get you as much fantasy information as we can, but it's good to hear him expound on schedule and, you know, what this could look like for them. I think he set it up well for the Jets. It's a long-term plan, which all the teams need to have. They didn't spend this year, although he's critical of them, rightfully so, for not trying to upgrade an offensive line when they did have some available cap space. They went a inexpensive route at center where they could have maybe targeted a top player. But maybe they feel like they got a better value out of the guy that they have. That remains to be seen. But, you know, he thinks 6.5 in Vegas is sort of right on the number. He thinks about 5 or 6 win team. You look at the way their schedule lines up, and he brought up a good point. Those three games in the first inside of 11 days is tough, especially if it's going to be Darnold at the quarterback position. McCown would probably be better equipped to handling that, right? That's rapid-fire games. He's open up at Detroit, then Miami 6 days later, and then September 20th at Cleveland, and then the next you'd have some time off, but then the next game is at Jacksonville. So those first four games, you have three right next to one another, and then you're on the road against the toughest defense in the league. And then it goes Denver, Indianapolis, Minnesota, at Chicago, at Miami, Buffalo, bye week. So a little easier getting into the bye week. Then you come out of the bye week and you play the Pats at home. Then you go to Tennessee, to Buffalo, Houston, Green Bay, at New England. So week 16 and 17, you host the Packers and you go to New England. So,
well, I think
the very beginning, the very end of the schedule are not easy.
If I can complain quickly, I don't understand why the NFL lets the schedule get like this. Like, I remember, I think it was 2 years back, the Eagles played, I think it was 3 weeks in a row, a team coming off their bye week. Like, you got to do better than that. But I don't know if you would be willing to pump the brakes on putting Darnold in, because if you look at that schedule, the back half of it is a lot more daunting. I mean, Detroit, Miami, and Cleveland, I understand. 3 games, 10 days, that's preposterous. But those are meaningful games if the Jets are actually going to see if they can make some type of push. And not to say that if Josh McCown is a better guy, you go with him. But if Darnold looks the better guy, I wouldn't hesitate on it just because that top of the schedule is difficult days-wise.
Despite the fact that he is arguably the most boring interview in all of professional sports. I get the sense from Todd Bowles, and he's the most boring interview because he doesn't give any information. It's worse than Belichick for those that haven't tried to listen to. Bob Wischusen is the Jets play-by-play guy. I feel bad for him at times because you can tell that Bowles doesn't want to do these like weekly interviews, and he just gives no information at all. He's very monotone. He's just trying to get through it and get on with his business at hand, which is coaching the football team. But I get the sense that it wouldn't be influenced by something like that. Do you know what I mean? He's a little old school. I think if he's just going to pick the best guy and go with it, he's had some rough times here in New York, and he's still stable.
All right, obviously, Mike there getting a little audio issue. So we can just cut Mike there. We'll obviously be bringing Mike right back in. But as far as the Jets go, I want to just piggyback quickly off of something that Brian Costello mentioned, because he was spot on just in terms of Darren Lee and how he's been in coverage. He was targeted 69 times last year, 50 passes completed against him for 570 yards, gave up 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That is good for a 111 passer rating. 111. That would have comfortably been the best quarterback in all of football last year. So it has been a real struggle for Darren Lee, and I think that's got to be the most concerning thing, is the selling point of Darren Lee has been his biggest weakness, coverage. So that is a real concern, I do think, for the Jets, and that is something that they're going to want to get sorted out, obviously, if they're going to move forward with him. And I think the one thing that is nice, as much as, again, any team wants to be able to make the playoffs, this is a young core. So they have some time to figure things out. If Darren Lee goes out there and looks great, great. If he doesn't, you can't look back and say, oh, that cost us the season, because this is year one of Darnold. It's year two of Jamal Adams. And those are your building blocks on the two sides of the football. And I will say this, and when Mike joins us, I'm definitely going to obviously.
I'm here. What was the stat that you had for Darren Lee?
Darren Lee, all right. So 69 targets against Darren Lee. 50 completions, 570 yards allowed, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, good for a 111 passer rating, which would have comfortably been the best in all of football. And I think that's just to Brian Costello's point there, and he said it perfectly. For the concern to be with him, what was supposed to be his strength, it does make it very difficult. When his selling point is his biggest weakness, it becomes very difficult. But as you know, he laid it out there. This is the year. So you're obviously not going to cut bait with him before that, but this is the year for him to prove that he can go out there and correct these struggles.
Yeah, they'll have to figure out, to his point, this is the year they figure out if they got to pick up the fifth-year option. You know, he played 16-17, this is year three. Then they'll decide whether or not they pick up the fifth-year option going into his fourth season, or if it's so bad that they have to cut bait and, you know, deal him for a mid-round pick or whatever it is. But, we talked to QB, we got Darren Lee. The wide receiver core, to your point, in our prep for this interview, you were saying this is kind of an underrated group. And I think Brian agreed with you. He's in line with that. But to his point, it is about the fact that there isn't a number one. They have a lot of talent here and veteran guys, but nobody would be mistaken for a number one wide receiver. In fact, according to Fantasy Pros, the highest ranked guy for fantasy purposes right now is Robbie Anderson, and I think he is at 37th as I try to get through my computer issues. I believe, 35. Excuse me. So right at the end of the wide receiver three conversation, which is right in front of Randall Cobb and Jamison Crowder and Devontae Parker, right behind Corey Davis, Emmanuel Sanders, Cooper Kupp. I think the Robbie Anderson conversation for me will be greatly influenced by who they pick at QB. I think he is higher on my list if McCown is the QB, and lower if Darnold is. So, and I wouldn't be surprised if the entire industry shifts that way, but it is greatly influenced for me like that. But we may not know that for a while. So if you have drafts in July and early August, you're not going to get that. That Sam Darnold's not going to be named the starting QB after the first preseason game. Like, this one's going to go deep, most likely, unless he so badly outplays everybody through that first week of the preseason. Then maybe we see a strong decision. But I think this one could go deep into that third preseason game, and then we'll see who it is. So again, that would be mid-August before you find that out. But I do like somebody like Cooper Kupp and Randall Cobb and even Jameson Crowder. I like them more than Robbie Anderson. DeVante Parker, I was very high on DeVante Parker coming out of the draft. It has not happened yet in the manner that I would have liked it to, but who knows? Now that he's the clear number one guy there, along with Tannehill back for a full season, maybe that changes. It is a big season for him too. So I probably won't own a lot of shares of Robbie Anderson, to be honest.
Well, I think he did put it perfectly, that this is it's a bunch of number twos. Where I would like to, you know, just throw a little bit of a counter, I still think Terrell Pryor has number one potential. Last year was terrible. But they do have a guy that has number one potential. And also, even if you have four number twos, fantasy, that'll crush it because you never know who's going to be the guy. But on field, that can still be enough. And I think that's one of the interesting things is, do they feel like they have enough in the receiving core to trust where they go with Darnold? And I really do think that Darnold has the opportunity to win this job. And if he wins this job, he will be the difference in this team winning four games or winning eight or nine games. And I think the one thing for him that will make that rookie year probably pretty difficult are the turnovers, because that was his concern coming out. It was a lot of fumbles, just some tough interceptions. And, you know, it's tough to bank on that being corrected year one in his first NFL season.
I'm not on board with your Terrell Pryor take.
Why?
I just don't see him being number one.
He did it.
77 catches, 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns, great season on an absolutely miserable Cleveland team where he was clearly the most talented guy. He is not clearly the most talented guy here. I'm not saying that he can't be an impactful fantasy wide receiver, but he's switching teams again now, and I need him to be what in this offense, right? We're talking about it time and time again. Do you think he's the guy that outdistances himself from this group? Like, what would be a good season for Terrell Pryor this year on this team with this group, with these quarterbacks?
Well, that's what
catches.
I mean, I'm looking at it, and I'm not saying he is a number one, nor am I saying he is the most talented of this group. But he would, of the guys, I think he would be the one that has that type of potential. Like, because we saw him have that type of potential on display in Cleveland. So you take that for what it's worth. I mean, as far as what dictates a successful season, I think it's to what you just said there. How much separation can he create? Do we enter the season, and does the depth chart have him as wide receiver one or wide receiver four? And the fact that both are in play does play into what you were saying, and I understand why you disagree. It's more so a matter of he, at least based on what we've seen from him, looks like a guy that could possibly get there. I agree, though, in the sense that it would not be likely. What constitutes a successful season from him? I have no idea. I just have no idea, because he could really end up being their fourth wide receiver.
It's off, totally off the wall. He caught 20 passes last year, the year after he caught 77, which was effectively his first ever year at the position at 27 years old. He just turned 29. So, look, I think there's something there, but I don't think it's ever going to be as a number one wide receiver. I think he's a complimentary wide receiver. He might be comparable to Devin Funchess or somebody like that, and Devin Funchess would probably be taken aback at that comment. But I think that's the type of guy he may be, or he can't be a lead wide receiver on a team. Difficult to have this guy change positions in the middle of his NFL career and then have those high expectations. I just think that the 77 catches for 1,007 yards is probably his best season that he ever has. But we'll see. I think it would be difficult on a team like this for him to bust out. I think he'd want to play against opposite one of the super talented wide receivers in the league, right? A complimentary guy to Odell or to AJ Green, or, you know, pick any one of those top flight guys, even the second tier of top flight guys. That would serve him better than being on a team with a nebulous quarterback situation and a bunch of number two and three wide receivers. But who knows? Maybe that gives him the opportunity to in the group, and he certainly is that. So good stuff there. Any doubts you had about Isaiah Crowell or the running back situation? I think Brian's told you straight up what it is. Isaiah Crowell is the man. That's it. He's going to get the ball a couple hundred times and do with it as you please. That is going to be
where is Crowell's ADP?
The setup.
Because that's
good right now.
While you look that up, I mean, that has to be one of the guys that, you know, you could definitely get some value on. I haven't seen him, you know, be anywhere near the top of the draft really at all. And, you know, if he ends up the guy.
33rd.
He's got talent.
33. That's behind Marlon Mack, Rex Burkhead.
Behind Marlon Mack.
Yeah, behind C.J. Anderson, in front of C.J. Anderson, Kerryon Johnson, Carlos Hyde. Tevin Coleman, Marshawn Lynch, Sony Michel in front of him. So there you go.
You haven't said a single name that after that conversation with Brian Costello that I would pick ahead of Isaiah Crowell. Maybe Sony Michel.
I like Tevin Coleman though.
Oh, he's a number. I've always struggled
doing PPR. At least.
Sure, I've always struggled with taking a guy that I know is number two on the depth chart over a guy that looks to be set up for a decent bit of volume.
I just need the touches. I don't necessarily need – I don't care where he is on the depth chart. And Coleman does get a lot of favorable looks near the goal line. He does catch a good amount of passes. Anytime Freeman goes down, Coleman's the guy. I probably overrate Coleman a little bit perhaps at times, but I do like him as a player. And I'm just looking at where the Jets were last year offensively. You know, it's funny because we talk about how McCown was pretty good, but then they were 24th in points scored, 28th in yards, and they had the 25th most passing attempts, but yet only the 17th most rushing attempts, which means they couldn't hang on to the ball for very long. They were 31st in average plays per drive, 31st in yards per drive, which means they were constantly punting, right?
Yeah.
And it's what hurt the defense, which their numbers, when you look at it across the board, aren't particularly good. They did their best, but they were constantly put in bad positions from a field position standpoint. So there you go. But I think Crowell could be sneaky, like a sneaky RB2. If he's ranked 33rd, I could see him being late RB2, right on the fringe there. High RB3, late RB2. I could see that. And hell, if the guy wins the job and he's touching the ball 250 times, I can guarantee you he's a lot higher than that. In fact, I'll do a little quick math during the break to see how many guys actually had that many touches.
And I think the one thing, though, that I wanted to mention to him, he kind of said, like, how are we supposed to know? Until the games start coming and the touches are actually divided up, it'll be difficult to tell. But he did show that frustration with Hugh Jackson last year. And if this thing goes awry, that's definitely not something that you want with a rookie quarterback. Like, if he starts to feel like he's not getting the appropriate work, that could be dicey.
This is true. So we're going to come back, 11 o'clock, man, 2 hours up, 2 hours down. We'll come back, we'll do the Dolphins after the break. It's Mike and Kevin on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Join us for hour number 3 after the break. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday morning. We'll be right back.